WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Heroin has made quite a comeback, and in some cities like San Francisco, the teenage population is particularly hard hit. One of the reasons for this epidemic is black tar, a potent and cheap type of heroin. My guest, Stephen Okazaki, has directed a new documentary about five teenage addicts in San Francisco. The movie follows them over a period of 2 years. It premieres on HBO tomorrow night. Two of Okazaki's earlier films are about the Japanese-American internment camps during World War II. He won an Academy Award and a Peabody for one of those films, Days of Waiting. He also directed the feature film Living on Tokyo Time. Stephen Okazaki told me that before he made his new documentary, Black Tar Heroin, he spent several months helping out at a needle exchange program where he established a relationship with the teenagers who became the subjects of his film.
There was one of the kids who's in the film, Jessica, was sitting on the ground reading One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And these other kids came up and said, "What are you reading?" And they started having this literary conversation. One said, "You should read William Burroughs." Someone else said, "You should read Arthur Rambo. He's a good heroin poet." And I just got very interested in the group of kids. And they were, I don't know, there was something about them that reminded me of being in grammar school, and where a new kid would come into class and everyone was sort of interested in them and you'd sort of become friends, but then the next semester came and they were gone and you just didn't know what happened to them. And these kids were interesting that way. They were very bright. They sort of subscribed to the romanticism of the drug. And at least in the beginning, you know, they were fun to talk to, fun to hang around. As filming went on for 2 years, it became more and more difficult.
Well, you know, one of the young women in your movie, Tracy, gets arrested, and she's sent to prison and serves 6 months of, I think, a nine-month sentence.
Mm-hmm.
She's released after 6 months, and she talks to you as soon as she gets out of jail and says she wants to go back to school, she wants to have kids, and she can't do any of this if she's back on junk. So she insists that she's going to never, you know, touch heroin again, because she got clean while she was in prison. And within 8 hours, she's shooting up again. What happened?
Well, I think two things happened. I think, one, once she was out of jail, we see her sort of, when she gets out of jail, she wants to buy some new clothes. She goes and buys some new tennis shoes and gets a T-shirt, and then she goes to her hotel, and then we're sitting in her hotel with her, and she just got bored. And you know, after just 20 minutes and wanted to go out on the street and see her friends, and her friends are all users, and she just sort of fell into it again. And it was also compounded by she was released on a Friday, and on Monday she was supposed to see her parole officer. But when she got out, she called the parole officer, and she was supposed to go in for a urine test, and she knew that if she used drugs, it would show up on the urine test. And but she called the parole officer on Friday, and he said, "You know, you sound really good. Don't bother coming in on Monday. We'll just talk on the phone." And so it sort of gave her license to go and use the drugs. I mean, I think, again, that's sort of an example of how the bureaucracies just, you know, don't help at all and, in fact, compound it.
It must have been very difficult for you as the filmmaker to watch her go back on drugs after having given them up. And I'm wondering, even if you tried to, like, talk her out of it, if you felt that you were in the position to intervene at all, or whether that was inappropriate.
Well, I think that when we were doing the film, we sort of, you know, we didn't make bargains with kids. We tried to make sure they wanted to be in the film. And at the same time, our, you know, we sort of had to make a bargain with ourselves not to just film their lives. Of course, we always said to the kids, "If you want to go into rehab, we'll help you. You know, we'll get you down there. We'll find a list of places to go." In one case, we bought an alarm clock because Jessica said she couldn't get up in time to go down to rehab for their first meeting. And so, because we were trying to be objective observers, we could not, you know, take them or force them. to go to the rehab. I mean, regularly. I mean, the sad thing is, people were always saying, "Tomorrow, I'm going to get ready to quit, and I'm going to be ready to quit in a week." And we would always sort of anticipate that, and it would never happen.
Mm-hmm. The young people whose stories you follow in your documentary shoot something called black tar. What is it?
Well, black tar heroin is kind of what crack is to cocaine. It's a sort of a cheap, sort of unrefined alternative to what the white powder heroin that people are used to seeing in movies. And it's kind of the heroin market in California and the West Coast has completely been taken over by black tar heroin, which is grown and refined in Mexico and brought up smuggled up. And it's while we were making the film, black tar heroin just completely took over, and I think that crack use and other use started to slip away, and heroin's really the sort of drug of choice among young white kids in San Francisco and up and down the coast. And it's the appeal is it's very cheap. The average user uses about 3 or 4 times a day, and each hit costs about $15. So they need only raise $45 to $60 a day, and most of them are able to do that. It's a struggle, but it's much easier to maintain that habit. You get high and you stay high for 6 to 8 hours, as opposed to crack, which you want another hit in 20 minutes.
How does a black tar high compare to heroin?
The black tar heroin is perhaps as much as 10 times more potent than the powder heroin that people were using 10 years ago.
So it's cheaper and more potent.
It's cheaper, more potent, way more abundant. In San Francisco, you see kids as, when we were out there, now there are kids as young as 13 and 14, boys and girls, turning to prostitution. And there seems to be not a lot of interest from the law enforcement to regularly bust them, particularly when they're, even underage prostitutes work fairly freely in San Francisco.
And a lot of them, you're saying, are working to get money for the black tar.
Yes.
And
prostitution tends to be the easiest, most efficient way of getting enough money quickly.
A couple of the young people who you follow in your movie turn to prostitution, and these are people who do it in part because they don't want to steal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Jake in the film has had a sort of moral stand that he would not steal from people. And so I think it's typical with, the kids we hung out with. And, they might commit crimes like breaking into cars and stealing CDs and things like that. But, they were not violent, and their crimes are all, they don't hurt other people. They hurt themselves.
Why don't we hear one of the young people in your film, Jake, talking about why he's turned to hustling?
That seems to be the only thing that I'm any good at as far as making money. I'm not any good at breaking into cars, or I have too much of a conscience, to rob innocent people. And I've been raped 4 times in my life of prostituting, and it's really hard. I don't like it. I mean, it's very degrading, And the people that pick me up, they try to make you feel, they try to degrade you as much as possible. I mean, they get off on that, They get off on making you feel like a piece of meat.
That's an excerpt of the new documentary, Black Tar Heroin, Dark End of the Street, directed by my guest, Stephen Okazaki. Stephen, there's someone else in your movie named Jessica who turns to prostitution to raise money for drugs.
Well, I think that in Jessica's case, she was sexually molested from age 5 to 11 by a relative. And I think she, throughout her life, has gotten used to sexual abuse and being used sexually. And, I think their main interest every morning when they get up is getting their heroin. And prostitution is just an efficient way of doing it. I think if they can get around it, they do. Jake said sometimes he would just try to break down and cry, and maybe the John would just give him money anyway. And Jessica, I think, is turned to ripping off her tricks as soon as they give her the money, jumping out of the car and things like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, at the beginning of your movie, there's something almost loving and almost sexual about the way these young people are shooting themselves up, you know, and they seem to be very tenderly holding the needle, and it seemed almost stylish the way it was shot. By the end, people are searching desperately for veins, and their bodies are just kind of getting ruined. They're totally bruised and marked with needle marks. You know, their veins are just gone. What was that like for you to see how their bodies changed over the course of the 2 years that you made your movie?
Well, I think that the kids in the film initially, I think they like the ritual of the needle. I mean, there's all this preparation that goes with it. You get to melt it down with the lighter, and they get very into the paraphernalia that goes with it.
And I can't help but thinking too that you've seen this in movies. You've seen movie stars doing this in movies. Mm-hmm. You've read about really hip bohemian people doing it in literature. Now you're doing it yourself.
Well, I think they fall in love with the imagery, fall in love with the ritual of preparing the dope and shooting it mm-hmm. up, and then one thing about black tar heroin, it breaks your veins down very quickly. So within 2 years, they're struggling to their veins have collapsed. They're shooting up in any part of their body, and in the end, many of them are just jabbing it into their muscles. Which causes a lot of medical problems, abscesses, and various other things. I think the most desperate moment that we filmed was when Jake had some blood clotting problems because his veins were such a mess. He had, I think, injected and infected himself, and so he went into the hospital, and they found a vein that they could fit him with an IV, and a sort of light bulb went off in his head that he could use that IV to inject his drug. So he sneaks out of the hospital, and for about a week, he kept the IV sort of clean. He would rinse it out, and he just shot his drugs into the IV. And when that clogged up, he readmitted himself to the hospital. He had been told by the doctor that if he didn't stay in the hospital, he could lose his arm or possibly die. And he stayed in there a couple days and again snuck out, used the IV to shoot up. And he did not deal with the problem, and he eventually had a couple fingers amputated, and I think they want to amputate his hand now.
I was wondering if he was still alive, because I just had a feeling he wasn't going to last very long by the time the movie was over.
Well, I think it's I constantly felt like this kid has just a couple months left, and then they would bounce back a little. I think, you know, I'm 46 years old, and if I just, you know, ate the Twinkies and other sugar products and slept as little as they do, I'd be a mess. But they're you know, Jessica's the youngest in the group, is 18, and their bodies take a tremendous amount of abuse. It's rather shocking how what terrible shape they can be in and still walk around. But they're young. I think when you see older addicts that can barely move, that just collect their welfare, trade in their food stamps, get their dope, and just stay in their rooms. I think that, you know, that's when you realize, you know, it does kill you, but, you know, a young body can fight off an awful lot.
My guest is Stephen Okazaki. His new documentary, Black Tar Heroin, Dark End of the Street, premieres tomorrow night on HBO. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Stephen Okazaki. We're talking about his new documentary, Black Tar Heroin, Dark End of the Street. Stephen, where did the young people who you made your movie about get their drugs?
The drugs are plentiful. You know, there are a couple different street corners in San Francisco that you can go to, and the drugs start, the dealers come out from the suburbs. They're usually Mexicans who, if they're arrested, are just deported. And they're out there at 6 a.m., and the drug addicts get up early and get their first hit. And when we would, that's when you see the, you know, how many different kinds of people take drugs when you're, you see the, you know, as well as the kids in our film, we'd sit there and watch, you know, the business people with their briefcase come up and pick up their heroin as well. The biggest day, though, I think for the addicts is the first of the month. They call it Mother's Day, when everyone gets their welfare checks and food stamps and trades them in for dope. And that's rather startling how much drugs come into the city around the first of the month. And towards the end of the month, it gets very desperate. And people start, if there's not enough heroin, they start mixing their drugs, taking speed, mixing their heroin with cocaine. And there's still a fair amount of mixing. If you know, each neighborhood has a sort of specialty. If you go to this neighborhood, you get this kind of dope. You go to another neighborhood, it's cheaper. You go to another neighborhood, it's mixed with cocaine. And but it's so frighteningly easy to get in San Francisco.
Your film is about teenagers who are using heroin. Is the teenage heroin culture, do you think, different from the subculture of older heroin addicts? Is it a separate world? And do you think the culture is much different from, you know, heroin?
Well, I think that the young people using heroin in San Francisco, I think, split off into little scenes. There's a sort of the you know, the goth heroin addicts, the punk rocker heroin addicts, and the William Burroughs heroin addicts. And, you know, I think there's a bit of, you know, there is, you know, it is sort of the trendy drug of choice right now for a lot of young people. And in that way, I suppose it's different than the older population. And, but, you know, there are, you know, I think the one really sad similarity is, you know, I for a few days I hung out with older addicts and they'd say the same thing. They'd say, you know, I think I'm getting ready to quit next week. I'm just gotta, you know, get my stuff together and I'm about ready to quit. And in that way, they were exactly like the young kids who were always just about ready to quit.
Right. What was the difference between the goth, the punk, and the William Burroughs heroin addict?
Well, the punk rocker, the punks seem to mix alcohol with their heroin, which a lot of heroin addicts that I know didn't like alcohol, and they hung out more in the Haight-Ashbury scene. And there's several heroin scenes in San Francisco. There's a scene in the Mission District that's very violent, and it sort of crosses over a crack scene. And we followed the sort of intellectual William Burroughs heroin addicts who roam between the Tenderloin District and the Polk Street area in San Francisco. And they don't mix that often. A few people, one of the characters in the film, Jessica, moves freely between the three groups, but she's very tough, and she could handle herself in most situations.
I know that there's a lot of, you know, romance about drugs in our culture, including heroin. But on the other hand, you know, heroin is so obviously a frightening drug. I mean, you know that people get addicted to heroin. Everybody knows that. And I think most people have some sense of what heroin does to the body. And so you have to ask yourself, why does someone start? Unless they're totally ignorant, why would they mess around in the first place with a drug like heroin? And I'm wondering if you got a sense of that from the people who you documented. Like, what were they thinking when they started?
I think there are a lot of, initially, when you talk to kids initially, there's a lot of superficial reasons because they thought it was cool because they read a book by William Burroughs. They listened to a rock song, but I think the sitting there watching him, I really begin to feel, not having done any studies on it, I feel that 90-95% of the kids are out there because there's something inside of them that won't be quieted any other way except by taking heroin. There's a pain in them, usually from parental neglect, sexual and physical abuse. And, you know, in the film notes, you know, a couple really extreme cases, but I think it can happen in any family. And I think, you know, I think it's the thing that everyone ignores. Everyone talks about funding more police or funding, you know, rehab, but it's, I think, to me, it's really about paying attention to child abuse and sexual abuse and parental neglect as really important issues in this country. And building more prisons and putting more police on the street don't address that in any way.
Stephen Okazaki's new documentary, Black Tar Heroin, Dark End of the Street, premieres tomorrow night on HBO. We'll talk more in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with filmmaker Stephen Okazaki. We're talking about his new documentary, Black Tar Heroin, Dark End of the Street. The film follows five teenaged heroin addicts in San Francisco over the course of 2 years. The film premieres tomorrow night on HBO. Yeah, this film certainly made me think about something that I, of course, already knew, but it still made me think about it a lot, was, you know, how difficult it is to give up an addiction. I mean, there were so many reasons for each of these young people to stop, and it was so hard for each of them to say no, and most of them didn't even bother to try. I mean, most of them don't even try to kick in the film.
Well, I think that I think once you've started physically kicking, I think is not as hard as doing it emotionally. I think that as a heroin addict, most, you know, if you've been doing it for several years, you've probably destroyed pretty much everything in your past life, your relationships to your family, to your friends, your job opportunities and things like that. And the hard thing is seeing these, most often I'd see kids kick and they just didn't have anything to replace the drug, and then that's why they'd go back to it. I think you sort of obliterate everything around you, turn everyone against you, and I think that's what makes it hard is what do you replace it with? You need to have a life. You need to have people that care about you that aren't addicts around you supporting you, and that Tracy, I think, has found that recently. She has gotten involved in an organization of ex-prostitutes and drug addicts, and so they know what she's been through. They know how to support that, but I think most people don't have that. Most people, and these kids have really difficult relationships with their parents, and I don't think they can get well without some support from their parents or from you know, someone like their parents.
In the first part of the interview, the young people seemed to be almost showing off, and I thought there was even an element of like heroin chic, and they seemed to just it seems almost like a fashion statement, the way they shoot up and everything. By the end of the movie, they seem so consumed by the habit and so desperate and so just used up. There's one young man in particular whose story I just found particularly troubling, because he seemed so bright early on and just so articulate. And by the end, he's very sick. He has AIDS. He's living on the street. He's one of those people who you see around, walking around alleys, talking to themselves, and you're wondering, how do they get into this predicament? And your movie kind of answers that question. I'm wondering what it was like for you to watch the descent of these young people.
Well, I think, you know, initially, we picked these five kids because they were, you know, excited about being in the film, and they were all very articulate, and particularly Jake, the kid you're talking about is one of the most brilliant, you know, kids I've ever met. And they were, you know, initially, I think, all sort of caught up in the coolness of being a drug addict. There's a sort of supportive scene around them. There's a sort of music scene around them that, you know, a lot of them were interested in. And there's, you know, there are different cliques. They can always compare notes about, you know, how they got their drugs and stuff. And there's a lot of dope talk A lot of them get into the ritual of preparing the dope, and fixing and nodding out, get into little rituals. Some of them are so into the rituals, like Alice, who's in the film, would, if she didn't have drugs, she would shoot up beer, and because she likes the needle so much. I think, sort of associated the pain of the needle with, watching her watching her sister get beaten up when she was a kid. And but by initially, most of the kids like the scene, like the romance of the drug. And but in the startling thing in the film is at the end of 2 years, they are all hardcore drug addicts. They look and talk. They're not kids anymore. They look and talk like adults who have one thing on their mind at all times, and that's getting their heroin. And that sort of tragic fall was really difficult to watch. And you wanted when we were finished filming for the day, we I'd always ask him, what do you want to do? Is there something, we can do to turn this around? And and the kids were not interested in that. And by the end of the film, they seemed to be incapable of finding a way out.
I was wondering if the young people in the film watched the film after it was completed and what their reaction was to watching their earlier selves when they were healthier, when they spoke more clearly, when they weren't as desperate, earlier into their habit, because several of them just kind of have slipped so badly during the period it took you to make the movie.
There are five kids in the film, and we've only shown it to one of them.
Why?
We've tried to. Four of them, the other four are in such bad shape. Mm. I mean, they're in unimaginably bad shape at the end of the film, but they're even worse now. And we are right now trying to find a couple of them that we haven't been in contact for a while. But I'm really afraid. I'd like to see them in slightly better shape before they watch the film. Tracy, who's in the film, is actually clean right now, and she watched the film and was just astounded. She did not believe that was her in the film. She's healthy right now. She's clean, and I think she was just speechless after watching it. She said, I know that's me, but it's hard to believe. I'm really worried. I mean, the kids are in such vulnerable conditions. Two of them are suicidal, and if we're sitting down and talking to them right now and maybe trying to set up situations where they can watch the film, but I don't think we'll do it without, perhaps, a social worker or a therapist there with them.
After having made a documentary about a few young people who have become heroin addicts, what's it like now when you're just walking the street and you see young people who you assume are heroin addicts because of how they look and how they're behaving, and they seem kind of desperate and they seem really strung out? What do you think about when you see them? That's different from what you used to think.
Well, yeah, I think filming on the street for, actually for 2-3 years, you actually can see the street now. Now I can. I think before I did the film, you'd drive down or walk down the street and you cannot see what's going on. And now I walk down the street and I can see the little petty crimes going on, people stealing dollars out of parking machines and things like that. And you can see the drugs moving around, because you know what you're looking at. And regularly you'll see these new potential hardcore drug addicts from the suburbs, and it's. You want to stop and pull them aside and send them home, but it feels so hopeless. It feels really hopeless in San Francisco. There, the drug scene seems to just be thriving.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your movie.
Thank you, Terry.
Stephen Okazaki's new documentary, Black Tar Heroin, Dark End of the Street, premieres on HBO tomorrow night and will also be shown April 19th, 23rd, 27th, and 29th. This is Fresh Air.